7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tom Mianelli here on a Sunday morning. Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin. Today is an auspicious day, Angel.
Oh my God, without a shadow of a doubt, one day when we roll the bloopers, we're going to, people are going to want to know why we're chuckling, but I give you the honors, my friend.
Well, Croc Nation, thanks to you and thanks to all of Angel's hard work, our board of directors' hard work, Rod Freeman's hard work, and everybody else. We are today celebrating our official 1 year anniversary of this podcast.
Wow. Wow. Can you believe it's been 1 year in all honesty?
Yes, it was I will tell you, it was a very, a labor of love. I will tell you right now, Croc Nation, if anyone doubts my love of you all, let me tell you something, the burden of having to put together a weekly podcast that has value and good content has not been easy. Learning the podcast business, which I have not yet, but I'm, you know, putting in my 10,000 hours. Having Angel in my life has been a true blessing and an act of God. He has taught me so much about podcasting. And I think that, you know, I feel that, you know, our performance, Angel, our interactions are stellar. I think we still have a lot to go. Last week, we do apologize. We had some technical difficulties, had some quality issues, and we're working on that. Hopefully that's solved. But it really has been a labor of love, and the work has been worth it. How about from your side?
I think, you know, and I agree. I'll agree with what you said about the technical difficulties. I own that. You know, the audio was very pitchy. You know, we're learning as we go as far as our quality is concerned. But I think what struck me just right now, actually, we're on the air every Sunday, and you know, that's 52 weeks in a year. So obviously this is episode 52, right? So there's 52 episodes, you know, starting today. And you remember the very first episode, you know, that launched, and we did the introduction of the Croc podcast. So let me play a snippet for everyone at this time.
Yeah, take your time. I got the clock going.
Here we go.
I want you to forget everything about your cancer. I want you to forget everything about what your doctors have told you. I want you to forget everything about your treatments. And I want you to start with a blank slate. This is Dr. Tom Mianelli, and this is the Croc Podcast.
So now I'm going to turn it back to you. How do you feel?
Oh my God. Well, you know, like I said, you know, I think my philosophy has always been that we were going to use that first year as an experimentation and to sort of get our chops and, you know, try to you know, hone our skills or whatever. And I have to tell you, I feel that I know less now than I did when I first started. I think that the sacredness and the responsibility of putting this podcast out to our beloved survivors is, as I've said it three times, a labor of love, but also a very necessary labor. And we've really tried to not put it out there too much. I mean, we have a ton of downloads, and there have been great friends who have been interacting with us and listening to the podcast, but we're nowhere near the level of exposure that we eventually will be. And I think that we did it a smart way. You know, I think we did it the right way, Angel. We did it. We did not cut any corners.
I agree. And I think that, you know, going into today's episode, we had something else in mind, and I'm glad that we're taking today's episode to really, really thank our viewers and thank them for everything that they have done. You know, I've always told you, like we sat down on our first day, it's not about, you know, trying to get into the thousands of the hundred thousands. It's just trying to, you know, do everything in our power to make sure that we touch one person at a time. And quite honestly, just hearing the feedback that I get, which again, may not be at the thousands yet, but we are touching people's lives and we are creating a foundation and a platform that is going to really change this industry. And I mean that, now these aren't just words, it's the reality, because, you know, no one out there right now, at least to my knowledge and my research, no one out there is doing what you're doing. No one out there is preparing a platform, a module, you know, a toolbox, quote unquote, for the patient, by the patient, and doing it from a doctor's perspective.
Yeah, no, I mean, we are very, very honest and transparent. We show our warts. If we make mistakes, we're using those mistakes to help you guys avoid those mistakes in your own survivorship. And I wanted to add, not just to our beautiful constituency and our survivors, but boy, we've met some great friends this year. I mean, podcasting, as you know, you're on what, year 17 now, Angel? What year are you on?
No, I'm on 4 years.
You would agree that the people that you find, the people that you meet, the people that participate, you know, the Len Berries and, you know, the Raina Audishes and, you know, the Katie Demings and Dr. Shapiro. I mean, we've had people really, quite frankly, we've had our friends from across the globe. I mean, we really had no business getting these amazing heavy hitters for y'all. We had no background, no real cred, and they believed in us because I think they know it's important to let everyone know that the emperor has no clothes. And that's a tough task to be that person to point that out. And that's kind of what we do here, Angel. We tell everybody all of the flaws and all of the problems and the brokenness, you know, of the medical system, especially as it relates to cancer survivors. And without further ado, this module is a real heavy hitter because, again, we're kind of piggybacking off of Lennon and Raina, and we're talking about their kindness paper of how to increase kindness in the management of cancer patients. And just to kind of go backwards before we go forwards, it's a 6 or 7 episode module. We've already spoken about deep listening, of which I'm very bad at. Hopefully getting better. Empathy, which we actually replayed one of our episodes. Timely care, which we did last week with our amazing navigators, Jane and Sarah. And today we're going to be talking about gentle honesty. Again, something that I need to get better at. And then we'll probably replay our one of our generosity episodes for Generous Acts. And then we'll bring it together and tie it up with a beautiful pink ribbon when we talk about supporting the family, caregivers, and caretakers. So that's kind of where we are. So let's start straight up, Angel. We're at 7 minutes and 43 seconds, which I think will be perfect. We'll be 30 minutes, no problem. And today we're going to talk about gentle honesty. So when I was a young kid living in the tenements of Paterson, New Jersey, I always wanted to go to a baseball game. I wanted to go to a Mets game. And my mother had a friend who had a boss who had season tickets. And one night, you know, in early in the season, they took me to Shea Stadium, and I got to see the New York Mets play the San Francisco Giants. And I got ice cream and a hot dog and one of those hard blue helmets. And I was just the happiest guy in the whole world. And the guy's name was Joe. And I will never forget Joe. I never met him before that night. And I never saw him after that night. But he will be in my memory forever. And I think that that's something for us to think about. Because if a kid can remember that 50 years ago, and that was the baseball game, imagine each cancer survivor and their encounter with who told them that they had cancer and how did they tell them that they had cancer. Were they kind? Were they gentle with their words? Or were they rushed? Did they not seem to care? I would like to quote the episode we did on words, where we kind of went through those vignettes. And I'll talk about my vignette with the Christmas lights. But just the positioning of that nurse in the room with the woman with the breast cancer, and how she kind of just sunk into the wall and blended into the wall. And she had a very closed posture. And it became very clear to the patient that she almost felt like she was infectious, like she had coronavirus or she had Ebola. And this nurse wanted not to catch whatever it was that she had. Or we, that nice gentleman who went to the world's best cancer center and got told he got cancer by the receptionist on the telephone. These are all things that a cancer survivor will remember. So when we have these tough discussions, and we've been talking a lot about sort of end stage disease lately, because I think a lot of the scenarios are specifically toward that group of patients. But our words, we're going to actually break it up into four parts. We're going to talk about words and posture. We're going to talk about environment. We're going to talk about perspective. And we're going to talk about position. And then we're going to go through the paper itself and go through some of the nice writing that Lennon and Reina et al. Did. So as I said, I wanted to, you know, when something happens in my career where I feel I could do better, I do want to point it out. And when we did that words episode, we spoke about that woman who was an artist who had metastatic breast cancer. And I needed to get her started that night. And I did everything medically perfectly, except, you know, she was sort of standing in her own way and she really needed to get treated. I didn't want her to get paralyzed. And she kept on kind of fighting me, and she pushed me and pushed me and pushed me and pushed me, you know, until I said, you know, she goes, why do I need these treatments? Why do I need these treatments? Why do I need these treatments? And I said, lady, you need these treatments because your bone scan lit up like a Christmas tree. So that, those words were not gentle. They were very anti-gentle. They were very crusty. They were very hostile. They were very angry. They were very confrontational. And they were very illustrative, meaning to the point where an artist who thinks a different way, who uses a different part of their brain, probably took this information and probably visualized themselves as being, you know, filled with cancer like a Christmas tree lights up at night. And her husband, who was a physician, came back to see me a bunch of months after she passed away. And, you know, I thought he came to thank me because she did not die paralyzed, but he came to chastise me because my words were not gentle. And I think that there are certain words and postures which are going to be very important for us to be very cognizant of. So certain words like just do, like, so if you're failing your chemotherapy, you're failing, we're going to get to the word fail. Let's not use that word yet. But if you're not responding to your chemotherapy, you're not responding to your immunotherapy, you're not responding to your radiation, and then the patient comes in like, what do we do now? You know, we don't want to use the word, let's just do something else. Like, let's not use that word just. Let's just say, let's do this now, you know, not let's just do this, like meaning that, well, Jesus, we've done everything else. What the hell? Let's just throw another cherry on top of the sundae, you know, so that's a good word we need to shy away from. Failed. I actually even used it just 3 seconds ago, talking about that's not a good word to use. So we're not going to use the word, you failed this regimen, or you failed this, or you failed that. Like, we're not teachers. This is not the MCATs. This is not, you know, the SATs. You know, our patients don't fail. They pass everything. They're geniuses. You know, there are cancer survivors. Let's get that word out of our vocabulary 100%. Hey, you know, you're lucky. You only have stage one disease. How about we take the word lucky out? Because, like, if they were lucky, they wouldn't be in our office, right? They would be out, you know, looking at the flowers or climbing a mountain or riding their bikes or going out for New York City pizza, or they're doing something awesome. They would not be, you know, coming in our office talking about how lucky they are because they only had stage one breast cancer, or they only had DCIS or whatever, or they only had prostate cancer. They didn't have brain cancer. So again, we're going to try to use these words and take them out of our vocabulary and change the way we talk to people. And again, deep listening, and also now gentle honesty. Now, a lot of people, and when we read the article, we're going to talk about this, criticize doctors for being too optimistic or for not being honest. So honesty is crucial. And there's several ways of saying things. I tend to say things the wrong way. I've been told by many people that I don't have a diplomatic bone in my body, and they're probably right. But I am trying, and it may not be in my DNA, but I'm trying to teach myself that, to be gentler, not to be so rough and be so, you know, I don't know what word to say. Just
abrupt.
Like, thank you. I think that's a great word. Yep. And you've been on the end of my abruptness, my abrupt stick, a few times there, Angel.
I mean, I would say, you know, obviously I don't work with you, except for with the podcast. I would say for me, in my experience with you, just to let our audience know and to be realistic, you know, just be really, really blunt. I think you attack, but when you attack, it's not a bite. I think you bark because you want things to go in the right direction, but you have no problem admitting if things are wrong, and you'll own it. But then you'll find a resolution and a solution immediately.
Yeah. So, but that's something, but don't forget, it may be too late if we get to that point of having to recognize and then solve or retract.
Right. And I'm only speaking from the podcasting industry. That's why I say,
No, of course. Yeah. But I mean, again, let's not get to that point, my dear fellow practitioners. Let's be gentle. Like, you know, let's be gentle, Ben, like that 1960s, you know, TV series.
Yeah.
We've talked about the computer, you know, and, you know, electronic medical records. Listen, they're here to stay. They're not going anywhere. But we need to kind of detach from that computer, especially when we're having these difficult conversations and when we're trying to be gentle and honest. And again, that nurse who I want to clock that nurse for the way she made that patient feel, that she was dirty or that she was infectious or she was terrible. And that leads us into environment. You know, we need to bring our patients into our rooms, but let's do it. Let's be smart about it. Like, here's a good way of not being gentle or honest. Angel, you know, Dr. Iannelli told me that you need to get to his office like immediately. He wants to talk to you about that biopsy you had the other day, and like, he needs you here like in an hour. Like, can you get here? Like, you got to get. And by the way, is your wife, can she come with you? And maybe can you bring maybe your priest, and maybe you could bring your rabbi, you know, and come, you know, with you, get, bring your pastor with you as well. We need to say, you know, Angel, Dr. Iannelli, you know, got the results of your testing. He would love to go over it with you face to face because that's just the way he does business. What's your availability? He will absolutely fit you in what works for you. In addition, when we bring you in, like, let's not bring you in like, you know, where there's a bustling, hustling bunch of people running all over the place. We need you to, you know, to take you to a nice quiet area, you know, where you could be peaceful and relaxed and, you know, provide that that environment that will then allow us to be honest, because what people we remember isn't what you're telling them, it's how you're telling them and the respect that you're giving them while you're telling them. So that would be the environment. And I told you about the first baseball game. You always remember that moment, that feeling, like there's a song that comes on and it brings you back, you know, to a great memory or whatever. I mean, do you want to be remembered? Because now you are going to be memorialized in the minds of not just the patient, but the patient's family. You are now like going to be, I remember, you know, I took my kids to see Coldplay and we got in the first row and, you know, whatever the name of that guy's, his name is Martin or something. The one who married Gwyneth Paltrow or whatever.
You know, out of my league on this one, but
Chris Martin, he puts his hands down and he touches my daughter's hand And it was like, you know, to this day, now she's 20 something years old. She goes, remember when I was 8 years old and you took me to say Coldplay and Chris Martin touched me? That was like the coolest minute of my life. Now, Chris Martin will never meet my daughter. She'll never see him again. She might listen to his music, you know, but he's remembered. And we want to be remembered, even though we're not in a positive experience, you know, having a concert. We're telling people, you know, important news. You know, we have to remember that we're going to be remembered for that. And we want to be remembered positively. And we want that experience to be as positive as possible, you know, for that patient.
And I think there's a good quote that I always live by, and I very rarely get a chance to use it, but I think it fits today. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely. 1,000,000%. We also have to look at perspective, Angel. I actually have a term that I use for my style of practice. And I say that I practice guarded optimism. That means I'll take a patient in a room and they might even have, you know, terminal cancer that will eventually get them. And they'll ask me, hey, doc, how am I going to do? And I'll say straight up, I'll say, listen, I'm going to tell you some good news. I'm going to tell you some bad news. I'm going to tell you that you do have cancer that's spread out of its original location, but it is treatable. We do not call these cancers terminal anymore. We call them treatable cancers. Now, our intention is not curative. We're not going to be able to cure you, but we will be able to treat you and take care of your quality of life and your symptoms. And I think you're going to do very well with these treatments. And I'm going to continue that position of optimism, guarded optimism until proven otherwise. And I think that I just told somebody bad news, but I did it in a way that was gentle and it was caring and it was honest. And I really believe it. And if I didn't believe it, I couldn't say it. So I believe every time I walk in a room, I have an opportunity to make a patient's life better. And the minute that I stop believing that is the minute that I have to, you know, quit what I'm doing and go make Slurpees at 7-Eleven. That's going to be the time when I'll know it's time to that's enough. The paper uses things like false optimism. We don't want, like, I don't want to blow smoke, right? I don't want to lie, because when you develop a relationship with a patient, especially the first time you see them or you're giving them bad news, you're developing a long-term relationship, a very close, intimate relationship. And that relationship has to be built on trust. It cannot be built on falsehood, because if a patient can't trust you, then there's no ground or no foundation for a future relationship. So that's one of the things that I think is important as well. And I want to use another expression that we talk about in our tumor board every week, and that's called the benefit of the doubt. So Angel, you've had a bunch of x-rays and procedures done over the last couple of years. And I see patients every day and I go through their x-ray reports. And if you were to read an x-ray report on the MyChart, and we have to do a podcast on MyChart, as a matter of fact, but when you look at your reports and you read them, you're convinced you're going to die. Even if it's a negative report, you're convinced you're going to die. Yeah. And yeah. I have to laugh because we are like such, pieces of like imperfect protoplasm that if we took healthy athletes or us, you know, in different stages of our life and did x-rays, there would be 15 abnormalities. Now, not abnormalities that might be cancer or kill us, but, you know, you have a cyst but can't rule out this, and you have this over here, and you have a tortuous aorta, and you have splaying of the, you know, circle of Willis. And before you know it, like, you're ready to go buy a cemetery plot, you know?
Yeah.
And when we treat patients, you could literally, if you have OCD, which I happen to have, but if you had real OCD, that was basically, what would you say? There's a word that was paralyzing OCD. You wouldn't be able to even get a patient started because you would be chasing your tail, getting MRIs and PET scans and bone scans and scopes and needles and biopsies and stents and, you know, arteriograms and all sorts of things. And we have an expression. We look at the case, we do the best we can, and we go absolutely crazy. And then we say, okay, there is the lung cancer. This is what we're going to treat. There's another nodule in the other lung. It doesn't look malignant. It looks okay, but we're not going to put a needle in it. We're going to give the patient the benefit of the doubt, and we're going to watch it over time and hope, you know, that it doesn't turn out to be anything, because putting them through more testing, you know, holding up their treatment for something with such a low likelihood of being a problem, is something that is not acceptable. So when we talk about perspective, we talk about false optimism, which is a no-no. We talk about guarded optimism, which is my personal, we need to patent that. That's my position. Focused hope, which is another way of saying it, and the benefit of the doubt. And then before we get to the paper, we'll talk a little bit about position. So our position as physicians should be 100%, 150%, 200%, 1,000,000,000% about the patient, about advocating, blocking, breaking down walls from our patient. But what happens if someone stands in our way? What happens if the person that's standing in our way of being able to administer this gentle honesty happens to be a family member, a brother, a mother, a wife, a husband, a child? I can't tell you how many times over 30 something years I've been told, you can't tell my father he has cancer. You can't tell my wife or she'll fall apart. You can't tell my son. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't do this to my parent. You can't give them this treatment. They are not going to be able to handle it. And you say to yourself, are we serving them or are we serving the patient? And I think we really, and I have to tell you something. Are we for the patient or are we for ourselves? Are we for the patient or are we for what's convenient to us? Are we for the patient or are we for whatever gets us the hell out of the office as quickly as possible so we don't miss our tea time or our dinner reservations or whatever? And if that means, sometimes it means we're going to make people pissed off and we're going to alienate people or get them angry or, you know, get a lawyer, you know, asking for medical records or whatever, whatever, you know, it's either us or the patient. It's either the patient versus convenience, and I pick the patient. So let's go through the paper.
Okay.
Go through some of the things. We're at 26 minutes. We're looking good. Most patients, as I said, remember the moment they were told they had cancer. What clinicians say and how they say it can influence treatment decisions and patients' quality of life. Asking patients how much they want to know about their illness is not kind. That's not what we want to do. We want to tell them, but we have to tell them in the proper way. Most patients, believe it or not, want to hear the truth. They want it in honest, well-chosen words that convey a sense of partnership, that you're part of the team, that you're vested, and you want to guide them to the right decision. Far too often, patients and doctors are too optimistic. So again, we don't want to blow smoke. That's not what we're in the business for. Realism, reality is needed so patients and their doctors can make good decisions. If we're too optimistic, that person may not resolve an unresolved issue with a kid or with their long-lost brother that they haven't talked to in 20 years, and say they die and that doesn't get done, and it's because they thought they were going to live another year. You know, shame on us, right? Also, if a patient knows they only have a few weeks, a few months, a year or two to go, they're going to live their life a lot differently. And we need to give them that information, but we don't have to hit them over the head and scare them, but we want to partner with them to make whatever time they have left. Let me tell you something, whether you have a day, a week, a year, or a decade, or several decades, we're all in the same boat. If we're sharing this earth at the same time, guess what? Every single one of us is screwed. So little Noah, who was born like a week ago, and me at 62, and one of our patients who might be 90, guess what? We are all in big ass trouble, you know, because our life is going to end in 3 seconds. So we should give our patients that benefit to be able to live whatever time they have left the way they want, not the way that, you know, they think they have time that they don't. what I see is there is no more benefit from continuing chemotherapy. That's a lot better than them to say you failed chemotherapy. Also focusing on day-to-day comfort, like your chemotherapy, you know, so far is, you know, not having the effect we desire. We think further chemotherapy may not be in your best interest. Let's concentrate on your day-to-day comfort. We can continue treatment, or we can do supportive care, not, or we could just do supportive care. We have to take the word just out of the sentence. We should never use those words like you failed or you're lucky. You know, these are words that we have to get out of our vocabulary. Those complex conflicts I told you about between internal pressures of giving the patient every chance to live every single day they can, or external pressures, like I said, family members putting pressure on you who don't want to give up even when it's time to slow down a little bit on the treatments, that's crucial. Gentle honesty, sensitive language, that is the key. Patients with cancer always hope for a cure, and we could give them focused hope. Again, my word, guarded optimism. You're optimistic until proven otherwise, and you give patients the benefit of the doubt. And I think that's the key. Because at the end of the day, when the disease is advanced or cure is limited, that intrinsic hope, living in the moment, helping them get through each moment of their day in order for them to love, to reflect, to spend time with their grandchildren, a dog on their lap to pet, a well-managed, you know, life without pain. I mean, these are really all the things that we're required to do when we're telling people news in a gentle but honest way. The peace, the comfort, the joy, and the sense of completion when a person chooses to live unencumbered by the demands of modern therapy, that could be a positive thing that has been generated by your honest news. Angel Santana, 31 minutes, 32 seconds. What are you thinking?
Well, you know, I think it's a great way to celebrate the anniversary. I think that it came full circle. I think that our toolbox is not complete. Obviously, this is going to be a big toolbox, but it has a definitive closure to be continued, icing on the cake from when we started, from, you know, breaking down the wall to defining survivorship to, you know, all the different platforms that you've had, you know, from identifying heroes to confessions to breakdowns to the nurses to the, you know, to honoring people like, Stevie.
Yep.
You know Steve. What I mean? Yes. Mm-hmm. And having patients first, and why all the drama, and I'm laundry listing, but if you noticed, everything is about the patient.
Yes.
And if everybody has been on this journey, knows this is just another piece of this ongoing puzzle, this journey that you need to come along for the ride. So let me just conclude my personal thoughts directly to you and not our audience. You have changed my life for the better. You have made me a better person. And you have also made me understand that there is a perfect way of looking at other people's problems. And I mean that in a way of whether it's being diagnosed with cancer, whether that's, you know, surviving cancer, but I think that I've always looked at it as if it didn't involve me, I didn't really need to know. And now I feel like I need to know. I think we all need to know what everybody can go through, what we may go through. And it puts us in a better understanding that life can be better if we are just all in the know-how. So for that.
Thank you, Angel. Those are beautiful words. And I will say that one of the things I love about the podcast is that we can appeal to people on many different levels. So number one is all of us are doctors and nurses and this and that, podcasters, but we're also patients. Each of us is a medical patient. And I think a lot of the information on this podcast would benefit everybody, not just cancer survivors, number one. Number two is that when I talk about the broken system, I'm talking to the survivors and the patients about how they could make their journey better, how they can avoid the pitfalls of a broken system, and also help my colleagues recognize what these broken systems are to try to mitigate and minimize these problems when they care for their patients. And I think that it's also just a feel-good place. I think everyone will feel our genuine love and respect for the cancer survivor and for each other. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. You have changed my life, my friend. You are a very holy person. You have awakened the sleeping giant of my spirituality. You are my brother in Christ, and for that, I can never thank you enough. Rod Freeman, have faith. Have faith, let it begin. Rod Freeman, small biz up. Rod, again, you know, you and Angel, you know, you are bookends of just such substantive, wonderful, good people. I mean, there's not much left to say. Anybody who needs their help, please give them a ring or a holler. You know their number or their websites. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte, thank you for everything. God bless you. Thank you for your support. Our board of directors, whose hard work is to be recognized on our one-year anniversary. Board members, I'm going to expect a lot more from you guys this year. You're going to have to help us with some of the heavy lifting. We're going to now start shouting out that we are out there, that the Croc Podcast is alive, and we are going to actively try to get people to listen and participate in the Croc Nation. And on behalf of Angel, on the entire board of directors at Croc, to our beautiful, wonderful, amazing cancer survivors, we wish you God's peace, God's love, God's help, God's blessings and mercy. We wish you a long, healthy, happy, cancer-free life. Be well, stay well. Spring is coming. Hang in there. The light is coming. The warmth is coming. We love you. We will see you in year two. Peace.